This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Lana, and I hope you've been having an easygoing day. My guest today came recommended on the heels of my last interview with Warren on the subject of men's issues. Joining us is Jack Donovan, who is the author of The Way of Men and an advocate for the resurgence of tribalism and masculine virtue. He's also known for his criticisms of feminism and gay culture. Jack is a contributor to AlternativeRight.com, Countercurrents, Radix Journal, and The Spearhead. We're going to discuss what is controversial these days: violence, masculinity, and tribalism. For thousands of years, mankind has settled territories, disputes, and enforced laws through acts of violence. Order demands violence. Today, we resort to proxy violence. If you are threatened with violence, you call a cop and ask him to do the violence on your behalf. George Orwell wrote in his Notes on Nationalism that, for the pacifist, the truth that those who abjure violence can only do so because others are committing violence on their behalf. Is this contributing to sissy men who aren't courageous, bold, and settling their own battles? Yes. Is this a contributing factor as to why good men do nothing as their nations fall apart before their eyes? Yes. Clearly, moral and ethical arguments, reason, emotion, and compassion are not going to remove crooks, invaders, and traitors from our nations. We'll discuss this and much more. Welcome, Jack. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Not too bad. Well, I know it might seem odd to people that I'm interviewing a man on masculinity, but here's the thing. From a woman's perspective, I want to see the return of the warrior, the Viking who takes care of business, not this wussified liberal man we see today. And I always get asked, why aren't more women a part of the European preservation movement? And I always say, they will be once men drop their balls and pick up their swords, because this is a primal attraction, wouldn't you say?
Well, absolutely. I was actually having this discussion with a few friends of mine today. And I think women do look for leadership in men. And if men just look like they're a bunch of guys arguing about stuff on the internet, there's not really much attraction there. But, if men build some kind of power base, then women will be like, oh, okay, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, sad but true, guys. Well, you've written about The Way of Men, which is the way of the gang. But would you agree that white men in particular have lost that gang mentality? They tend to be more individualistic, whereas the other races are very group-minded.
Well, I don't know if it's lost. I just think it's been we've been so encouraged to go the other way. I mean, I don't know that our primal instincts are not necessarily there. I think it's easier in our society, where we don't have to worry about survival or protection or anything like that, to just rely on the government for everything and not really worry about what other men think. And as I've often said, it's really easy to be an alpha in a pack of one.
Oh yeah.
You know, I think it's easy for men to convince themselves that they're better than they are if they don't have to interact with other men on a private level.
Well, Zionist Jews sure know the way of the gang, clearly, whereas European men they've become, like you were saying earlier, maybe too passive, nonviolent, they're too nice. And it's amazing that men and women have gone from pagan warriors to these compliant state servants. And I know this has gradually happened over time, but in your view, how do men begin to bring back that tribal warrior?
Well, that's something I'm thinking about a lot right now in terms of, I think because white men built all of these Western nation states, I think we still believe that they're ours. And so that is our tribe to a certain extent. And I don't think that that's true anymore. And I think that other people certainly, whether it's, bankers or whatever, actually run the countries, and, politicians who, are really just going to serve voters and people who are giving them the most money. But I think, American men and probably men throughout Europe still think of themselves as being highly invested in this society. And it's their society. Whereas I don't really think that's the case anymore. And I think that's part of the disconnect there.
Well, thinking in terms of the state, people talk about, fighting corruption through nonviolent means. But is that possible when the state itself is using violence to hold some sort of order?
Well, I mean, all states are coercive by their nature. And it's just, again, whether we're invested as we feel like we're members of the state or the enemies of the state. And No, I don't think that nonviolent means, and I don't mean to say that violent revolution is a legitimate idea on the table right now, just because of the technology involved.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's a foolish move, and that's kind of like just kind of playing in the hands of the media, because ultimately the media is going to turn that into whatever it wants to be, you know, and it'll kind of serve the corporate agenda. And so it's not really about violent revolution, but I think it is about pulling away from the state, and instead of trying to change the state from the inside, undermine it from the inside. If we no longer consider ourselves part of it and really think of ourselves as really like almost another immigrant community that's living within the state, that's really not, you know, so many other groups are just like, oh, well, the state does this and here's what we're going to do. And we're not like emotionally connected to it.
Yep. Stop filling out those papers. Just don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Just do what you're going to do and, you know, make friends with who you're going to make friends with and form your own support networks and stop worrying about, you know, these kind of staged melodramas of politics that we have all around us today.
No, I'd say men under the surface are probably more violent today since they're suppressed more than ever and they're told by the government that they can't avenge themselves when they're wrong. So what do you think happens when men suppress violence? Because violence is a natural part of being human, right?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, and I just think that they become withdrawn. I mean, I wouldn't say that men are more violent today. I think that they don't even know how to be violent.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
They've been prohibited from being violent for so long that, you know, they still have the same urges. So they get channeled into things, whether they're, you know, action movies or video games, but these are all kind of spectator events. And so I just feel like it's almost like a self-esteem problem. Like men actually, they don't really have any experience. And this is kind of a part of the feminist critique of modern masculinity as well. I mean, some people, I think Susan Faludi said this in Stiff, possibly, is that because men have no opportunity to really prove themselves as men, they have this kind of neurosis from never having that opportunity. It makes them kind of insecure.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people talking about lately, especially in the men's movement, that there's a crisis of masculinity. So do you think there's a crisis?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. There is. It's just an ongoing decline. And the crisis of masculinity, when people want to talk about it, it's always followed by how we're going to redefine masculinity for the modern age. But we're still, for the most part, the same humans that we were, you know, a few hundred years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so redefining masculinity doesn't necessarily serve our needs. You know, if we just make it to whatever, you know, we should be. I mean, philosophy is about, you know, the world that you want, you know, the world that you think is best, not let's just adapt to whatever happens constantly and say that that's good. And I think that's kind of that's kind of the attitude a lot of people have taken in the technological age, because things have changed so quickly. They're like, well, this is how it is now. So this is what we've got. And I don't think that they're doing a very good job of deciding what they actually want.
Yeah, I'd agree. So are you concerned about where men are today and where they're headed?
Oh, absolutely. I think that if current trends continue, I don't really see, like I said, there's no real peaceful way out of this because really the state really, as it serves big corporations and everything, has every interest in keeping men contained and separate from each other. It has no interest in allowing them to become more masculine. You know, if you're trying to control men, why would you want them to be more masculine? You would want them to be as, you know, if you don't need them as soldiers, and they don't need most of them as soldiers, you just want them to be compliant consumers. And I think, you know, women have been used to being taken care of more throughout history. And I think it's easier for them to look at the government and say, and this is the majority of women, not all women, but it's easier for them to look at the state and in it paternally and say, oh, well, it's going to take care of us now.
That's horrible.
You know, and that's not always true, but I think women tend to think that way. And, you know, it is taking care of their interests more today than perhaps in the past.
Definitely.
It's maybe not for the long-term good, but, you know, it's definitely not good for the long-term balance of men and women, but that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, you mentioned big government right away. Just think of welfare and a socialist system. And it's true. It's killed risk It's killed true competition, and there's a primal drive to survive, but it seems like people don't have that when there's a huge government involved anymore, which is a travesty.
Yeah, well, then it's just really about pleasure seeking and, you know, what makes me happy today. Long-term planning, guys, it goes out the window. And there's no need for heroism or any kind of real endeavor.
So do you think that strength, courage, mastery, and honor, is that an important part of being a man?
I think that's how men judge each other, even if they're not trying to. And that's why I use those virtues in my book. That's what I was looking for when I wrote The Way of Men, is I was looking for kind of a universal definition of masculinity that describes what men are talking about when they look at one guy and they understand that he's manlier than that guy. They don't necessarily know why. And I was trying to figure out why. You know, what are their criteria that we're judging them by? And my criteria were strength, courage, mastery, and honor, because I think those are the things that men needed from each other in their survival scenario.
How would you define masculinity?
Well, as, like I said, as the cluster of qualities that men have looked for in each other throughout history, which are these tactical virtues, the strength, courage, mastery, and honor. I think that once you start going beyond that, then you start talking about morality. And you start talking about a lot of human things that really women have too. You know, but if you're talking about specifically the strength, courage, mastery, and honor, especially strength and courage, you know, being stronger naturally and being less risk averse than women naturally. And it's always been our job to risk. And
Paid more.
In theory. Yeah. But I mean, that's always been the job of men. So I think that's always been part of what masculinity is.
So what do you make of this growing gender neutral fad?
Well, I mean, it's like I said, it's easier for people who want to control us if we're all kind of the same and interchangeable. So, and you know, the more passive we are, I think there was a thing actually in Sweden, wasn't it? It might have been Sweden, where they wanted to change the gender neutral pronoun was hen.
Oh yeah, that's the place.
And I mean, and that's kind of convenient. There are always these kind of little digs at men.
Oh yeah,
you know, like hen. Well. You know, in English, which I believe most Swedish people know some English, that's, you know, a female chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it's a little dig at men. The same thing with in the West, there's this, you know, it's a little bit more radical. Most people don't know about it, but people say cisgender, you know, which is someone who, you know, conforms to the gender stereotypes that are more traditional. And so they'll call, you know, men who are, you know, more masculine, cisgender men. Well, of course, cisgender, that has kind of sissy built into it.
Yes, it does.
And so it's all these little digs. It's really about emasculating men. The gender neutral is never really... The idea that women are going to become more masculine is kind of implied. But the important thing, I think, to most people is to tame men. And I think that that's why, you know, you see so many couple... It's so much rarer for you to find a pair of parents who've decided that their kid is transgender when they're five. You know, it's usually a guy who they've decided, oh, he picked up a dress once, therefore he's transgender.
Yeah.
Whereas like if girls want to play softball, they just let them play softball. You know, they don't try and turn them into boys.
It's true. Yeah. I've met a lot of women actually I've come across that they really want their little boy to be gay. So they'll, you know, paint his nails and dress him up and they're kind of hoping for that.
That's kind of bizarre. Yeah. I mean, it's that wouldn't happen. It's really sad because, I mean, women didn't want that from men 100 years ago. They would have been horrified. You know, they wanted their men to be men. I mean, I even say this, I joke about it with my mom because, you know, we have, you know, Facebook and things that we didn't have years and years ago. And, you know, I'm almost 40 years old and, you know, my mom's not allowed on my Facebook. Because she'll say things like, be careful, you're going to hurt yourself if I put picture of myself lifting something or whatever. And I'm like, Mom, would you have said that to your father? You know, as a 40-year-old man, would his mother have ever have said that to him? No, she'd want him to show everybody how awesome he is. you know, she wouldn't say, be careful, don't hurt yourself. You know, so I think that we're at a place where, definitely women are kind of influencing men in that way. And it is kind of unfortunate because that wasn't always the case.
Yeah, the other day I was reading about the Vikings, and basically, if you give a man a gift in that day, which could be interpreted as feminine, was an insult. They didn't take to that very well. So they were pretty masculine, those Vikings, you know.
Yeah.
And then in today in Sweden, for example, just the other week, another young girl was gang raped by a pack of Muslims. And my first question was, well, where's the dad and the brother? And what are they going to do to make this right? Because if this happened in pre-Christian days, the father would simply just go over there and kill the guy, right? But now the power to war and avenge has been taken from men. So isn't it a primal drive for a man to want to deal with his enemy?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I've actually been reading some of the Icelandic sagas myself recently. And this dovetails into a piece that I'm writing right now. Someone asked me to write something about the death penalty. And, you know, I see all these kind of abstract. We've given the state all this proxy power to do violence for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes very perverse because really you have all these people saying it's like a mob. Like you see the medieval mobs and whatever, like, kill this person, you know, these shouting for this person's death. We kind of do that now instead of this personal thing where, you know, a father, you know, should be able to seek vengeance for his child. You know, I think, and that's right. And that's natural. And it's not this kind of proxy violence where they have some person far away take care of the problem. Like this person is just kind of garbage and we'll just make this problem go. You know, I think that kind of deprives them of that retribution. And I understand, obviously, that creates a lot of chaos when you have, you know, kind of vengeance is the driving force in culture. But I don't know. I think proxy violence is kind of perverse.
Yeah, because I think if we didn't have that, if we didn't have government intervening, there would be a natural order that would just happen over time. And things would settle down and people would learn, hey, I better not mess with that family.
Exactly. And you know what? The other thing that was interesting to me as I was reading through some of those is that there's less execution and more banishment. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, you know, communities will be like, you know, we just don't want you here. You create too many problems. You've gotten in too many fights. You've killed too many people. You just cannot be here anymore.
Exactly.
Well, we will kill you, but you need to go.
Yeah.
And rather than keeping these guys in these prisons where they just turn into worse criminals for, you know, 30, 40 years, and then finally executing them or just keeping them a prison for life, and they come kind of mastermind and run gangs and all kinds of stuff. You know, it's a bad system that kind of perpetuates itself.
And then the other thing that contributes, which I'm really sick and tired of, you know, New Agers and also Christians who go on about turning the other cheek or giving it to the universe when someone wrongs you. Do you think religion, including New Age ideology, have contributed to taming the man?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, and I have a lot of Christian readers too, and that's, you know, and they look really hard for the masculinity in Christianity. And of course there have been many, you know, obviously the Crusaders were not to be trifled with and so forth, but you know, they're great knights that were all Christian and so forth. But I do think there's something in that religion that kind of dampens some of these spirits that we're talking about in terms of, just kind of masculine vigor. I think there's a lot of, submission. In Christianity and also in some of these Far Eastern religions, because if you look at a lot of them, they come from big caste systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you think of like, you know, everybody loves Indian religion and Indian culture. And, you know, they have this giant caste system where people are supposed to know their place and stay there forever. So, of course, there's kind of a huge submission element to it, you know, and kind of, you know, Islam. I don't know about the caste part of Islam, but I know that there's a huge obviously focus on submission, even though that's not the way it's playing out right now. It seems like men do what they want and what they're allowed to do, no matter what the religion is. But, you know, I do think it contributes to the way we talk about violence and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And then today in Western countries, for example, should you just turn the other cheek when La Raza is screaming from the streets about killing the gringo, or in Europe when Islamic extremists are demanding Sharia law? I mean, is nonviolence going to sort this out? Or, I mean, the only way I see it sorting out eventually is going to be some sort of violence.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to sort itself out in terms of, each country will have its own kind of thing. Because if we're looking at like even the problems in Europe, you have Muslims, which is kind of a different problem from Mexicans. You know, in many cases, the Mexicans who are in America are not the same as, they're not, certainly not as angry as the Muslims. And they're not blowing themselves up in trains. And they're not doing stuff like that. But I think that, you know, as the white population in these places is replaced, and they become a minority group, then the narrative kind of changes. And I think that's what's going to happen no matter what. At this point, I mean, I think we're far enough along that road, is that white people are going to become a minority in a lot of these places. And then that'll be interesting in the way that it changes the entire narrative, because you can only, you know, when white people are only 20% of a population in an area, you can't really call them the majority anymore, and you can't really blame all the problems on them. You know, and I think that right now we're still at a place where that's still possible for people to do.
Yeah, I can't stand it. I can't stand watching it, especially a small country like Sweden. I'm married to a Swede, and it's... Mm-hmm. They already are a minority in the world. Swedes are rare. You know? I mean, protect the endangered blonde, you know? Where's that protection?
I know. It's unfortunate. It's, you know, you hear all the time in the news that, like, you know, blondes and especially gingers, you know, are going extinct. So.
Yeah, well, in your book, The Way of Men, you wrote, if you're going to survive, your group will need protection from predators, animal, human, alien, or undead. And many guys write us and they complain that they don't have a brotherhood or a like-minded tribe. And it's apparent that this is becoming necessary in these times for us Europeans. At least that's how I see it. How do men start finding their tribe? How do they start getting a brotherhood going?
It's a tough thing because, you know, like I said, there are a lot of forces in our society that want us to keep us apart. I mean, it's even in terms of like working hours and things like that. I mean, we only have so much time in the day. And, but... I really feel like it is possible. I wrote an article recently called Age of Wolves about a group in America that is kind of doing that, actually in Virginia, that's kind of formed its tribe. And there are women involved too, and they have kind of their own role in the tribe. But there's also, you know, it's kind of a group of men that gathers once a month and, you know, it's kind of building that kind of brotherhood. They've been doing it for years and years. So it's a good model. And so I'd encourage anyone to read that article. You know, if they're not interested in the specifics of that particular group, the model is there. You know, I also did a podcast with a guy where he talked about how he started it. So, I mean, you know, it's a tricky thing. It's hard to get guys to put down what they're doing. And it's certainly harder to get them to swear to a brotherhood, because that's a serious deal. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not like they're used to... We're used to having these disposable cultural things that we're involved in, that we can just go from one movement to the other. And, you know, belonging to, you know, an ideology is just really, you know, as much as difference as liking a different Facebook page. You know, we're not, you know, deep into anything. And, you know, a serious brotherhood is a commitment. And, you know, I think men have to think about if they really say they want this kind of brotherhood, they have to be really willing to commit to a brotherhood and not just commit to a brotherhood that they're in charge of.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to be the, you know, the chief, but you know, you kind of need everybody to be, you know, flexible enough that they're not necessarily the leader all the time.
I think our ancient ancestors in pre-Christian times, they had a brotherhood.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And there really is a resurgency of this pagan folk memory. We've been talking about it a lot. And I think that as that comes out more and more, I think people will start forming their brotherhoods and their sisterhoods, especially if whites are becoming minorities in their own lands. At that point, it's about, you know, ethnic survival.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that they should do that. And I think that they should, you know, do anything that they can. So I think one of the major points that, one of the starting points is a lot of people do now, they discuss political ideas and so forth online. And, you know, we get caught up online, but I really have met guys who over years on a message board or something have basically created a small culture. You know, the starter, they have all these inside jokes and they have all, and that's really kind of where friendship starts. And so, you know, it's one thing, it's okay if you meet people online. The next step is it's proximity. You really have to get these groups of people close together, because that's when the next level of this kind of group formation happens. You can talk about groups all day long, but until you guys have a bunch of guys who are in the same room often enough, you really don't have much of anything.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. That's one thing I see in this European movement. It's about organizing and getting together has been a little challenging, but it's just in the beginning phases, so we'll see how it shakes out. And of course, if you guys get together, you know, it's the KKK or Nazis and you want to go kill some Jews. So
Exactly. So
got to stop that. Well, do you think we're going to need another dark age to get back on track, or is that the easy way out?
Well, I don't see another. I mean, I think the way that our society is programmed to this point, I think we do need to kind of step back a notch. I don't necessarily mean that we have to go down to stone tools or anything again, but
yeah, sure.
I do think that we need to break away from the modern world. And I do think that there needs to be some kind of collapse to help that, but maybe we can help the collapse. maybe we can, by refusing to invest in our society and becoming separate from it, but kind of living our own lives to our best of our ability within these societies, hopefully we can contribute to the just a kind of hollow state, a lack of faith in the government, to the point where it just becomes this meaningless thing and real change can start to happen.
Yeah, it's funny you brought up technology, because a lot of times when you talk about paganism or returning to what's natural or nature, people automatically think that we're going to have an ox plowing the field. That's not what we're talking about, because we might need those robots to protect our borders, you know?
we might. It's just an issue of marrying the two. I mean, maybe more Mad Max, you know, guys mm-hmm. who know how to operate cars. But, because we're never going to go back to that time period unless there's like some tremendous calamity. But I think we can take ideas from the past and move them into the future. There's that great book, Archaeofuturism. And I really like that that concept, in the sense of like taking good ideas from the past, good things that we have now, marrying them and creating something new, not doing kind of historical reenactment.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's just trying to breathe life into a dead culture.
Yeah.
You know, let's make a culture that's alive again.
I'm with you. Well, another thing here, I mean, we should talk about the war on testosterone. I mean, have you looked into how men are being feminized by endocrine disrupting chemicals by any chance?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not a scientist, so I can't really evaluate those claims as well as I would like. I've talked to some other people. I mean, I know that testosterone is dropping for many reasons, chemicals being one of them. And, I think also just nonstop submission is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Our testosterone drops, it's been proven that it drops like when your sports team loses. Well, if you're losing every day, what do you think that does to your testosterone?
If
these guys are, these little boys who are going to school and being told that they're bad because they're boys and, not being allowed to play, not being allowed to do all the things that boys do. I mean, think of how that affects their testosterone, like as they get older. I mean, there's just so many things that are kind of, the amount of soy in our diets, there's so many things that are influencing testosterone for the negative. And there are a lot of guys out there who are actually trying to get around that. I know a lot of guys who won't eat soy and a lot of guys who won't drink, things out of plastic if they can avoid it. And, who are trying to take steps in a variety of ways to kind of increase their testosterone and get back what they've kind of been robbed of. But, who knows how much of it is in just the water.
You have to try everywhere you can, and eating organic foods. And there's certain foods that are good. Grains, forget about it. Working out, lifting weights, all those things increase testosterone, which I feel we need some of that. Women need that too. It's actually biological. When we kiss a man, we get a surge of testosterone, and that's what gets us stimulated. So We need that surge too.
Yeah. Certainly not the same level though. That's when it gets a little scary.
Oh yeah. Start getting a deep voice and getting strange hair.
Yeah. That's counterproductive at that point.
Yeah, I think too. I wonder if this is intentional with the chemicals. If it's about infertility and erectile dysfunction, that there's some elite that are causing this on purpose. Do you think there's a conspiracy behind it?
Well, it certainly would serve their interests. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big conspiracy guy. I think that people were just, I think self-interest always explains a lot more than conspiracy. I think self-interest at every level. If you have something that, like, for instance, if we're not, like I said, I don't know the exact science of it, but I believe one of the things that might be affecting people is, like, say, birth control in the water.
Yeah.
Females and birth control and whatever. And if you have that influencing everyone, that's very convenient for society. Mm-hmm. Birth control is a very convenient thing, and we really couldn't have feminism without it. And so, that's something that kind of explains a lot of this without really needing a conspiracy.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just convenient. And same thing, plastics are convenient. They didn't know they were bad for us back in the day, but they sure were convenient, so.
Yeah, there was a study I was reading about birth control pills, and they're horrible. Women should not be taking that stuff, but it actually makes women more attracted to girly men.
And they
actually are more attracted to women too, more bisexual. So I thought that was an interesting link.
Yeah, don't they also kind of give off different chemicals to men? Like different pheromones or something. I thought I read something like that as well.
I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking, I interviewed this plastic surgeon and she was talking about gynecomastia. She's been removing lots of man boobs. This is more of a frequent thing. So, that's scary.
Well, yeah, it absolutely. Whether it's caused by hormones or just obesity is even hard to tell because, obesity causes then, higher estrogen in men. So, there's definitely a problem. And if you look at some of the other races, that are more similar, you can see maybe how civilization has that kind of impact. When you don't have a big frontier and you don't have this kind of struggle in life, if you think about the Asians. Asians, there's a smaller difference between the males and females. Even facially, hair-wise, all those things. And I wonder, how much of that has to do with long-term submission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Good point. Well, I saw this other study that infant boys are being born with smaller penises, and there's more occurrences of something called a buried penis. So that's a bummer for the younger generations.
Oh, yeah, that certainly sounds unfortunate. I didn't know that was the case. I've always heard that penises were supposed to get bigger, evolutionarily speaking. I forget why. But, that's certainly unfortunate. You feel bad for those guys because that's one of those things we really don't have the technology to fix. Penises are kind of a mystery still.
You can't get a dick implant. Sorry.
Yeah, they're not like breast implants. They can do it, but they're not. They're not the same.
Well, there's a lot of unnatural things. I was talking about this on Renegade Broadcasting. It's like sex today is unnatural. Think about it. People, they incorporate plastic condoms, these pills to make you hard, pills to make you wet. You use petroleum lubes. We lay on toxic mattresses and chemically processed bedding. And then some men even watch the Jewish-produced porn to get them going. And let's not forget, our boys are circumcised in America. So, this is definitely contributing to some sexually frustrated and unhealthy people, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Wow. That's your description of it sounds even worse than I would have thought. it almost reminds me of one of those stories of the Japanese sex hotels and that kind of stuff. All kind of completely plastic environment. But no, absolutely. And porn is a big factor, too. And I think that, it's kind of a weird necessary evil, I think, for a lot of guys because, there's just kind of whereas girls are very available, they're maybe not available to all men. And instead of getting married at 18, they just don't have access. Mm-hmm. You have all these guys without real access to girl. And in many cases, if they have high standards, they don't have access to marriageable women.
Yeah.
I mean, I talk to guys all the time. It's like, you know, guys who would like to settle down and have kids, and there just aren't a lot of women out there that are the kind of women you'd want to marry.
Yeah, there's a lot of idiots being programmed out there. I mean, Hitler said young women were malleable as wax, and unfortunately, it's true. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's unfortunate. I mean, I talk to these guys. It's like these girls have basically been having a lot of sex with a lot of guys, and then they want to settle down in their early, you know, early to mid 30s. And guys don't necessarily want to have a woman who's had sex with 40, 50 men as the mother of their children.
Well, of course. Yeah.
You know, that's a concern. And so I think that I've seen a lot of guys who, as they get to that age and they're ready to settle down, they realize that either the women already have like two or three kids that are illegitimate or whatever, or they just don't, you know, these women are just not the kind of woman you'd want to be, have be mothers.
Yeah, young women are malleable as wax, and unfortunately today, many women, unlike the shield maidens of the past, are more susceptible to being molded by external forces, and all they want is to fit in and be popular. So if that means sleeping around, they'll do it. If that means doing lots of drugs, they'll do it. Or if that means having biracial kids, they'll do it. Is it a lack of strong fathers and mothers in their lives, or is it about climbing the social ladder so their children will rank higher in society? Or are women just more immature these days? And then with entertainment, media, and education pumping nonsense into their heads, it's a mess out there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely, the sexes have definitely become to a place where they're kind of, you know, at a war, not in a melodramatic way, but just this kind of standstill where it's like women are going off and, you know, hanging out with their girlfriends in bars and having cocktails and doing their thing. And men are kind of over here doing the other thing. And they really don't have any reason to get together. You know, but they do, at the same time that like men don't have any private male spaces aside from their own bedrooms. You know, they don't have any places where men are allowed to get together, because then, you know, just like if, you know, white people get together, that, you know, they're Nazis. If men get together, they're sexist. You know,
well,
so,
they should just start doing it and ignore all those labels. That's what amazes me.
I agree. I think that one of the things that men need to do is start saying no. And, you know, it's easy for me to say this, but, you know, I think other guys, you know, I think it's, they get scared off by that. And, you know, they've been taught all their lives that the worst thing that you could be told that you are is like a racist or a sexist. And so, you know, instead of, you know, and they'll be challenged on that, and they'll start making arguments like, I'm not a sexist or I'm not a racist because... When the real argument should be, I am a sexist because,
yeah,
you know, just own it. Like being a sexist is natural for all of human history.
Yeah.
It just means that you believe that sexes have different roles.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, unfortunately, as long as you allow feminists to frame that debate, then men already lost. You know, don't take a defensive position.
And then in some ways, I feel, well, from a European perspective, I think some of the men's movement, they're not hard enough because they don't touch the political stuff of, you know, white males, that demographic is being treated worse than the others. I wish that they would be a little louder and take some hits as well. I mean, they get called sexist, but, you know, who cares if someone calls you a racist? It's just a word, you know, who cares?
Yeah, and I think that it is because those words are stinging less than they used to. I think that... The media is becoming more and more hysterical in the way that they just ruin everyone who says anything. I mean, there used to be kind of like, well, he didn't really mean that. And they'd get both sides and whatever. And now they just don't do that. There was a guy the other day, a black man actually, on ESPN, I think. I didn't hear the whole clip, but basically the idea is that he said something like, women should not do things to invite abuse. And he's had to recant.
Oh God!
And then now he's on suspension.
That's
and,
just ridiculous.
You know, it's not like he said something horrible about women, but just the idea that women should would be at all responsible for anything that happens to them that's negative from men is an unacceptable idea. And so I think more and more people, more and more men especially, are just looking at this and being like, "This is not even something that is legitimate at all."
I love how feminism, it never shows the shadow side of women. It's just the shadow side of men. And they never show the light side of men, the dark side of women. That's never discussed. It's, oh, you're a female. You're a saint. You can't do anything wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, like, you know, women have their own thing. So, I mean, if you look at the way that gods and goddesses were portrayed, I mean, I always think of Hera, you know, and you know, the, you know, her, you know, as Zeus's wife, you know, just, you know, she was devious. She was always getting back at him and going back and forth. And you can just kind of see them bickering like an old couple. And, you know, and that's men and women have always had that kind of, you know, combative relationship in many ways. You know, like, you know, that we're different enough that we don't always understand each other. And, you know, women use their wiles to manipulate men a little bit. And you can't say that if, today, but, you know,
I feel so far removed when people complain about their relationships, because I'm in a really good relationship, and a lot of the things that they fight about, it's like it's not a part of my life or my consciousness. I'm like, whoa, you're still there.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's rare. You're lucky. I mean, I think a lot of, you know, people do want that, and I think, you know, a lot of people do have pretty good relationships. I mean, still, I mean, there are, that does exist. It's possible. I mean, both my sisters are happily married. And, you know, they seem to have pretty good relationships with their husband. I mean, obviously, there is the sex push and pull always, you know, like between men and women of what they want, what one side wants and the other side wants. But
men pretty much
seem to work it out.
They just always want it. Just expect that they always want it.
So. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, as far as I meant sex roles, but as far as actual sex, yeah, I just assume that men want sex. Yeah, that's and if they don't, they, you know, there might be something wrong, you know.
So what do you think it's like for the younger generations of guys growing up today? Are they confused today on what it is to be a man or how to become a man?
They don't even begin to know how to define it. I think that most men, you know, they get stuff from the movies. A lot of them don't even have any kind of relationship with their fathers. And when they do, you know, their idea of what masculinity is allowed to be has already been programmed. I mean, if they've gone through a public school system, they've already been told, you know, what kind of man they're allowed to be and what they're allowed to say. And so I think they do come to it, you know, very confused. They come to adulthood. And, you know, I think that, you know, they're used to growing up in a world where masculinity is in scare quotes all the time. You know, if you say manly, you have to put it in quotation marks. So everybody knows that you're not really serious about it, you know, and they're kind of making fun of it. It's kind of has to be ironic. And I think that is changing though. I mean, I think that, you know, I think that young men are looking for that because they realize that something's wrong at a certain point. And, that's when I think they get involved in many times, some of the like pickup artist, scenes, and, you know, they start to realize that they've been told really a line of bullshit about women. And, you know, they try to figure out, well, what do women really want? And unfortunately, that's kind of swings too far the other way sometimes. But, you know, that's what happens with culture. You know, someone told me the other day, I'm kind of a necessary overreaction. So
how do you feel about that?
I thought that was fair. Yeah.
Yeah. You describe yourself as a barbarian, right?
You know, I aspire to barbarianhood. I wouldn't say that I'm actually a barbarian. I'm sitting here with a headset on.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, walking around my office. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I think I like the idea of the barbarian, and that's what I talked about in one of my speeches, and that's kind of what I want to write about next in terms of a book, is the idea of us separating ourselves from the state and becoming stateless. Because the idea of a barbarian is really just a kind of a foreigner. You know, someone that the state doesn't recognize because their ideas and their ways and their customs are alien. And I think that, you know, I think in order for us to become stateless, you know, we have to have different cultures. And that, you know, I'm a big fan of the idea of, you know, the you know, reinvigorating, you know, these Northern European heathen cultures and so forth. I think that, you know, a lot of guys come to me and they want to second guess all that and make it into like something modern and new and whatever. But I know, and you can bring it into the future, like I said, but I think that, you know, you need something to start with. And I think that maybe that's our starting point.
What are some of the aspects of the heathen culture that really jump out at you?
Well, I like their gods a lot better than Christianity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they just feel much more natural to me. Much more admirable. I mean, they're heroic but also doomed gods, and I think that's a great kind of metaphor for where we're at. We're in Ragnarok, possibly. that we're in this kind of doomed age, and so to see these people who know that their fate, they're not immortal. They know that they have this fate. They're gonna die in combat anyway, and I think that's something that is very inspiring to me.
Did you grow up in a Christian house?
Yes. Yeah, I got a Catholic, but it was like lapsed Catholic. It wasn't like really strict.
So did you have a hard time coming out of that?
Not really. It was just something that just never really interested me. And people always want to argue about Christianity forever. And to me, I'm just like, it's so boring.
Yeah.
Why do we even have to talk about it? It's mm-hmm. so boring. We don't need another 2,000 years of that. I'd rather, if we're gonna talk about gods, I'd rather have ones that are, interested in strength and heroism and, fertility and vitality rather than kind of this eternal kind of whiny self-sacrifice.
Oh, I agree. Now, is it true that you were a part of the Church of Satan for a while?
Yes.
So how did that go? Because that's still in the realm of the Judaic mythology, so I don't take it seriously.
Well, yeah, I don't think Satanists really don't take it seriously either. I always tell people it's kind of theatrical atheism, for people who like horror movies. The Church of Satan, it really is kind of an atheistic religion. But what I really took away from it that I liked, I distanced myself from it because it is kind of that culture of me. And when I started writing about honor, I didn't feel like I could be associated with something like that anymore. Because, honor is about self-sacrifice. So, I was involved with the Church of Satan, but one of the ideas that I took away from it that I really liked was the idea that we're still programmed for ritual, and that we're still animals, and that we should have rituals that are relevant for our lives and that help us, kind of take us somewhere different. For Satanism, that was all kind of like this kind of evil demonic thing for people who like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in many ways that kind of informs my approach to, more northern religions, is that let's look at these gods and like I said, pick the ones you like, pick the ones that are yours, and, pick the ones that have attributes that you want to model yourself after and that can kind of bring you up in this world instead of always focusing on what's going to happen when you're dead.
Mm-hmm. I especially like a lot of the Nordic deities. You can pick one up and if they don't do something for you, you can denounce them and move on to the next one. It's like, this god didn't
like
do anything for me.
That's like Conan's god. If you don't help me, then to hell with you. I did like that about Satanism in that sense. And it seems like, as much as people, some people, they would raise an eyebrow about that, but it seems like that's kind of a natural pathway for a lot of people who are moving from Christianity to something else.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a youthful rebellion, kind of a silly religion that, people don't really stay involved with for very long. I think Michael Moynihan is a good example. He was involved with the Church of Satan and went on to be involved with the magazine Tear and had Blood Axis and all these things that are very Northern inspired and Germanic. So, I think that it seems like a lot of people go through that phase. It's like kind of somewhere where death metal is.
Yeah.
And then they go to death metal and then they go to like Viking metal, something like that.
Yeah, you mentioned you felt that Satanism was a natural rebellion after Christianity. And I can get that because in Christianity, you're told to constantly be selfless, self-sacrifice, and surrender to the man in the sky. You basically have no self-value and it erodes your personal identity. But on the flip side, Satanists are all about the self to the extreme. So I get why ex-Christians go that route, hoping to find their identity and self-worth again, because, of course, it's still in the paradigm of the Judaic mythology.
Exactly. But I think that to stop there, one could say that our individualistic culture in the West is Satanism enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this kind of Daily Show liberal culture where all everything is about your own pleasure. I mean, that's kind of what Satanism is about. And so I think that to move beyond that, then you start thinking about tribe and, you know, not just yourself, but a tribe, you know, not your savior, but your people and your friends and your family and people you care about.
It's true. I've been very anti-collectivist, and I know Henrik, my husband, has been too, but now we're like, wait a minute, our folk, how are we forgetting about our people?
Yeah. I mean, it's really cool to be individualistic when you're like 22 years old, but you know, it's like, I think you need other people ultimately. Like they say in the Planet of the Apes movie that came out recently, you know, one ape weak, many apes strong. You know, the forces of modernity would love us all to stay in our little cubicles,
yep,
and our little houses and become like, you know, like the Japanese people who sleep in their, you know, corporations and then, you know, go home once a week or whatever, the company men. They would love us to be that way, because, you know, people like that have no friends. They're really easy to control.
But it's about finding your tribes, because even if you're European, you might have a different tribe of people, because some people are white and they're communists, and then there are some that don't want any state and are anarchists. So do you see things maybe possibly breaking up in the future?
Because I think that's necessary. I think that natural human groups are not as big as white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a huge group.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, it would be like, not even just heathen white, but like this group of heathen whites and that group of heathen. I mean, that's, I mean, it, and also one gigantic movement is easy for a government to infiltrate and break. You know, that's easy for, I mean, that's, they've been doing it for years. They know how to do it. That's what the FBI is for. But, you know, if you have a bunch of different people just doing their own thing and, you know, they, you know, almost more of a cell model, somewhere between a cell and a tribe, you know, then you have a lot going on. It could be a movement to do that. And that's kind of what I try to encourage is, you know, for these people, you know, there's a lot of people who are still into it's become really kind of fashionable almost in the far right to get into Orthodox Christianity, which I find terribly boring.
And
not, like nothing I'd want to be involved in at all. But, you know, those guys, if they're going to do that, they need to stop worrying about what pagans are doing and what other people are doing and just go to their church. You know, go to church, start a church group, do your thing, you know, and the same thing with, you know, all the heathen groups and, all, you know, other groups, other ideologies. You know, modernity is such a big thing that we need everybody to be against it separately.
Yeah, I know, I know what you mean.
I mean, you know, because even non-whites, because it can't just be white people. It has to be everybody, you know. Yeah. So I still try to encourage, like, groups of other people, you know, whether they're Native Americans or, you know, Filipinos or whatever. It's like, find your tribe and, you know, break away from the state, undermine it.
I'm with you there, 100%. Well, as we begin to wind down, I did want to get your opinion on what do you make of the modern gay community today and gay rights? Because you and I probably both agree that rights are not given, but you take them and you make them so. So what is your critique of today's gay community?
It's kind of a silly, it's a silly way to have an identity. If your identity is all about sex, then, you know, that kind of explains you. You know, mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, men should be better. Men should care about other things. I'd rather have men that care about manliness than care about their entire identity has to do with their sexual orientation. And, you know, there are bigger and more important problems in the world. The gay movement has actually kind of descended into self-parody in the way that they really had all their legitimate goals. You know, they achieved all of their legitimate goals. I mean, in the sense of, like, you know, in the 70s, they did pick up guys in the park and put them in jail and call them sex offenders for the rest of their lives. I mean, they did do things that were cruel and unnecessary. And instead of integrating those people into society, they kind of turned them into people who hate society. And I think that was unfortunate. It had a lot to do with Christianity, I think, as well. You know, this kind of weird, you know, Judaic sexual neurosis. And, you know, it's over-concern with what everybody's doing in their bedrooms all the time. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, you know, well, fortunately, I think that those real injustices were overcome. And now it's just an increase of like things that they want, you know, and you know, like they, and it's interesting because, you know, like you have something like gay marriage and, you know, those guys really had these relationships that were not involved with the state at all. And now they're, you know, they're campaigning all of a sudden to have the state involved in every aspect of their lives where it doesn't need to be at all. I mean, they were kind of freer than they want to be. You know, they want to have the state more involved in their lives. And that's really unfortunate because, you know, the state being involved in your life doesn't make it better. It just means that they, you know, they have someone else to go after for money. You know, like when the banks have someone else to ask for money when you die. And that's really unfortunate. But unfortunately, it seems like the gay movement, like all, I think, movements in the way that politics works these days, is that, you know, you have this organization that had kind of legitimate goals to start out with, or at least, you know, something that was worth listening to. And then over time, it snowballs and runs away and, you know, it becomes self-perpetuating. Because these people still have jobs, you know, they have jobs in these movements. And once they achieve a goal, they don't just pack up and go home. They need something, they need the next thing to be angry about. And so they keep looking for the next thing. It's like the gay movement has now gotten to a point where it's really about transgenders.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, which is an entirely different subject. It's really poorly understood. It's, you know, redesigning society for, I mean, gay people were like, you know, 2.5% of society. Now we're talking about like a tiny, tiny fraction of that. And talking about redesigning bathrooms and redesigning society and talking, you know, there's
minority
an article
rule,
recently.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, extreme minority rule. You know, it's a, and that's really, I think, part of the, it's caught on because in many ways it's part of that big feminist project that we were talking about kind of getting rid of all sex roles. And, you know, if you think about it, being transgender is basically making who you are, your whole identity, really a consumer choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can buy the sex change and the hormones. And so, oh, look, I'm a man now. I'm a woman now. You know, I can change whoever I want. Like, I can go to the mall, you know. It's all very kind of consumer oriented in a way. It makes us all very interchangeable. And I think that's a little too convenient for the powers that be.
Yeah, exactly. They can use all of these things for political means, of course. Yeah, I saw some transgender person made a YouTube video that was complaining about Obamacare needs to pay for my operations and my hormone shots. So that might be coming up next.
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, I know, I think the city of Portland pays for that.
Oh, they do, huh?
For their employees. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, anybody who works for the city of Portland, I think, can get the city to pay for its sex change. I know that was on, at least I know that was in the news that it was on the table. I don't know if it's a real thing, but I assume that it passed because Portland's, as you know, pretty liberal. So
I think they pay for abortions too.
Well, of course, you know, why not? Right.
God. Well, Jack, it's been a pleasure. Please give us your websites and any other details you'd like to give.
All right. Well, my website is jack-donovan.com. So that's pretty easy. I also have an author page that you can find on Facebook, and I send out things that way. And I'm on Twitter as well. I'm easy to find. And my new book, actually just my most recent book of essays, Sky Without Eagles, and that's kind of about the separation from, you know, America, is that just recently came out in paperback just today, actually. So people should be able to get that. It was in hardcover before, and now you can get it in hardcover, paperback, or audiobook.
And, of course, people should watch your presentation from Omren's conference in 2014 and also NPI's conference from 2013, because those are on YouTube, and you did a great job there as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much.
As a woman, it troubles me seeing European men who are increasingly becoming cowardly and weak, quietly submitting to political correctness and socially acceptable attitudes. You European men come from Europe, the land that has given birth to explorers, conquerors, and warriors, academic geniuses, brilliant inventors, exceptional artists, master builders, and inspirational philosophers. Europe has accomplished what all the rest of the world together did not. Your ancestors did not become great by sitting around, getting a gut, becoming dull in the mind, saying, someone else will fix things. Jack wrote an article titled, Violence is Golden, where he said, it's time to quit worrying and learn to love the battle axe. History teaches us that if we don't, someone else will. So where's your internal battle axe, guys? Where is it? The last thing the crooks, traitors, and invaders want is for European men to unite, rise up, and put their collective foot down. But that's precisely what we need. Men who can put their heads together and come up with a master plan, a brilliant tactic, one that the world would not expect. Where's the brotherhood of men who are courageous, strong, and value honor and loyalty? And I say this to the women, get your act together. Where's the sisterhood, the loyalty, the excellence? Men need a reason to go into battle. Women and their children give them that reason. They need backup from their women. So, as women, we should encourage our men to become strong, bold, and defiant on every front. Give them a reason to want to pick up that battle axe. You'll be amazed at how your relationship dynamic will become greater when he taps into his warrior side, which has been greatly suppressed in modern times. Men and women should be encouraging excellence from each other. And women, raise your sons and daughters to be strong-willed in their purpose, not the will of overlords who seek their genocide in the end. How you parent is a powerful tool, and we create either kings or slaves. All right, enough of my rant. On a completely different note, on the subject of hormone balance, I'd suggest all of you men and women listening to find a naturopath and go get a hormone panel done. You take the test kit home and collect saliva samples at specific times and then send it to a lab for testing. Don't be shocked to find high estrogen levels with all the estrogen mimickers present in our environment. But the good news is that you can get yourself balanced and you'll feel a huge difference. A naturopath can help you with this via supplements, food, exercise, and herbs. I feel this is highly important and everyone should test themselves. Radio314.com or redicecreations.com are the websites where you'll find more. And Radio 314 is on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, iTunes, Stitcher, and on RSS. Feel free to give us a good review on iTunes in order to help bump our position for others to easily find us. And of course, you can support us by signing up for a membership at redicemembers.com, where you'll have access to all our programs. Look out for more interviews and a couple movie TV reviews coming up. I hope you all have a pleasant day or evening.
Freunde, der ihr schaubert zusammen, ein Ortstier, der all drei Heimer sehr gut an je tü. Der Fee, der ja Freunde, der schaubert zusammen, ich weit ein, nach all der Dei, du mir um Dei, da.